Happy birthday, Fausto.
Aw, thank you, Mark. What are we doing on my birthday?
Well, we're going to do a podcast.
Yay!
Today, it's my husband Fausto Furnace's birthday. He turns 52. Born and raised in San Juan, Puerto Rico, Fausto moved to Texas to go to university and then Chicago to become the performance artist, lesbian flag designer, and podcast pioneer you all know and love.
Today, we're looking at using your birthday to fearlessly pursue your dreams and a look back on the North American solar eclipse 2024. And then going on from being a fierce drag queen to a professional bodybuilder in just 30 short years.
Plus, a look at the controversial life of O.J. Simpson. And no joke, his dad being a well-known drag queen in San Francisco named Mama Simpson.
And farewell to Lori and George Chappelle, the world's oldest conjoined twins. They died at the age of 62. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And happy birthday, Selena! This is Feast of Fun. Beady, 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 boom, boom. I didn't realize that me and Selena share the same birthday.
You and Selena. Yes, yes, you do.
Selena Quintanilla, the slain Tejano superstar, who in her day, she was seen as the Madonna of Tejano music.
She sure was, right?
And unfortunately, her career was cut short by one of her fans and...
Well, her fans and the person who was in charge of her fan club.
Yeah, the president of her fan club. Yeah. And she, you know, took a gun and I guess she was getting fired. Is that what it is? I based all my knowledge on Selena based on the Jennifer Lopez made for TV movie.
She was stealing money from her.
Yeah.
She was investing money.
Why are you doing
and
this
I think
to me?
She confronted her about it and then she shot her.
And, you know,
I think she's free from prison now, right?
I guess. I don't, you know. It didn't. Jennifer Lopez didn't make a sequel. But it launched her career, actually.
Jennifer Lopez's?
Yeah, when God closes one Selena, he opens up a Jennifer Lopez.
Aw, well, I think she was a fly girl, right?
Living Color.
And had done some other things, I think. And then, but yeah, that really put her out in the world.
I feel so feliz.
Now, you were in Texas when Selena was kind of like starting to come of age.
Not only was I in Texas, I was in drag when the week that she was killed. Mm. By her president of her fan club. This is why we tell everybody, just run your own fan club, okay? and we, like, 3 days later, all the grocery stores were selling, like, merchandise. Like, Selena, we will always remember you and stuff. And we were like, you know, at the time, we were familiar with some of her songs, mm-hmm. especially the covers of that song. What is it? What is the name of that song? Da-dee-da-dee-da-da-dee-da-dee-da, what's the name of that song? It was the one of the Pretenders, the Fotos sin recuerdos, you don't remember that song?
Chain Gang?
Yeah, back in the Chain Gang.
She did the cover of that?
Yeah.
I'm not a huge Selena fan.
How can you be married to a Latino? At one point in time, I was the only famous openly gay person in the world. And then Ricky Martin had to come and steal my thunder again. I mean, God, Selena. I've even done like performances. I've even sung her songs, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
you're like, listen, were you there? You were in the room when
you were there. You were in Texas, so and you know your family's from Corpus too. So it's guys have that kind of connection. I was working on the day that she died, and like all the Hispanic people I worked with, they were super bummed out. You know, like, what's going on? Why is everybody so upset? And they're like, Selena died. To be honest with you, I didn't even know who she was.
I remember when Bianca Del Rio was fighting with one of her fans. In what really was a foreshadowing of what Drag Race would become today.
Oh, with the...
A melee between the performers and the audience. But but back in the day, it was like, people used to, you know, be pretty well-behaved when they went to see a drag show.
Now or it's a comedy
like
a, show.
Too. Yeah, now it's like a wrestling match. They just throw chairs at each other and shit like that. But it was Bianca Del Rio was saying, like, her off-color comedy that she was famous for at the time. And she had just gotten on Drag Race and was, like, clearly, like, you know, why even bother doing the season, right? A heckler comes up onto the stage and says, you know, I want you to know that the Latino community pays your bills. And she says, you know what I want to know? I wish the Latino community would pay their own motherfucking bills. And people went, wah! And then she says, and you know
and
what
she
really?
Read them to filth after that.
And then
too.
She said, you know what really pisses you off? Want to piss you off? Selena is dead. And that's what made her a star.
Yeah.
When God closes a Selena, he opens up a Jennifer Lopez or Bianca Del Rio. Oh. It's not the same. It's like wish.com, you know. You didn't get what you ordered, but you're glad it arrived.
There's no returns.
Yeah, you know, and life is short. Listen, if you blink, you're going to miss it, you know. And one thing we like to talk about here on Feast of Fun, as our gal pal T.S. Madison likes to say, be yourself. Get a job, own a business, have some good sex, and step your pussy up.
And have you been stepping your pussy up this year?
I sure have. So when I turned 50, you know, we talked about this on the podcast and on social media, that I was going to pursue a lifelong dream of being like being a bodybuilding show, not winning or anything like that. And I did it. And people are like, a drag queen like you? You used to weigh 110 pounds. You don't have the genetics for it. Blah, blah, blah. You're so inferior and so weak.
But a lot of those guys up on stage, if you really look at them, they're really small. They're puny. I mean, they're like 5'5", you know, 5'7", and they just have a lot of muscle.
Well, the thing about it is, like, I don't think of myself as that big or something, but like my coworkers, you know, relentlessly every day they're like,
you still think you're like a diminutive little flower?
I'm still think I'm the 150 pound drag queen from Del Rio in Texas. No, for Puerto Rico, who, you know, a Texarican who, you know, used to convince heterosexual men that I was a beautiful woman on
the inside.
Cable access television.
Beautiful woman on the inside.
On the inside and the outside. And so like my early artistic career was being on television in Austin, Texas in the early mid-90s. And it was kind of, I was right next to Alex Jones, who before then he was not like a right winger or anything.
I'm sure he was probably some kind of
right. He was, you know, like, you know, straight talk with Alex Jones, you know, that kind of thing. But a lot of crazy people came in and out of those cable access studios. You know, it was a community resource. Mm-hmm. So every nut with a bone to grind, you know, an axe to grind, they showed up there and ranted for an hour. And that's really, you know, what led to podcasts being what they are today. Because when we got into podcasting in 2004, it was just like people reading their blogs. Like,
well, and also, too, yeah. Like just before that, we were looking at actually going back and doing a cable access show.
Yeah.
And then podcasting happened. We're like, let's just do a podcast. We don't have to deal with, you know, having to go down to a studio or having, you know, we can still do the same kind of things and create more more volume of programming, too.
Internet A, do you like iPods? I like iPods. Yeah, so like early pod, if you go to, I don't know how you can do this, but through the Wayback Machine, you search for podcasts in 2005, Internet Wayback Machine, you can search on this, and you can find some really old shows, and they're literally like, well, today I went to the grocery store, and there was my neighbor that I don't get along with, Sheila. She was a real bitch and blah, 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 you know. And you're just like, this is the most boring, stupid thing in the world. And I was just like, hey, let's do a reality TV show meets round table discussion and interviews and fun things like we used to do on the cable access. Mm-hmm. And let's do it, put it on the internet. And children, that is how one of the first podcasts was born, Feast of Fools, that became Feast of Fun. And voila, here we are 20 years later. Not doing much else. Going to look at solar eclipses.
Yes.
Drive in there and everyone's like, don't look at the sun. Don't look at the sun.
Did you look at the sun?
Yeah. Well, people are saying, they're saying, don't look at the sun because it's going to make you gay. And I said, well, no harm there. Already am.
Ramped up those gay powers 150%.
Yeah. It's just like Heroes. Now we have secret powers.
Ooh.
Yeah. My power is subverting everybody else's power.
But we did go see the solar eclipse. We had our solar eclipse glasses on, and we caught the full totality of it. And it was amazing to see it. We saw one, 7 years ago? 2017.
In 2017.
Yeah. And so now 7 years later, we went and saw it.
Hold on. I got to do my Beverly Hillbillies math. Not, 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 not. Subtract the not. Yeah, 7 years ago. But in Macanda, Illinois.
We saw it in Macanda.
Turkey Vulture Festival.
Mm-hmm. And this time we did it in Terre Haute. And we were too late to buy one of those t-shirts because we went as the last minute. We were going to go to Erie to be with family and see it, but we were worried that there was cloud cover. You know, in Erie, they did get to see it. So that's really great. But, you know,
I think they all had to drive to Ohio.
My sister drove to Ohio, but my other friend who lives in Erie, she had a good view of it.
And oh, good. Okay.
I had some other friends, and they had a good view of it.
Show me the photograph. Just saying. Oh, it was really great. Show me the picture. Yeah. I took a picture of it.
You took a great picture of the solar eclipse.
I was kind of shocked. Well, this is the thing. In 2017, I tried, and mm-hmm. I was, like, failing miserably. So in the last 7 years, every time I take a picture of, like, stars or the moon or something, I'm always practicing for this solar eclipse.
But we missed getting the t-shirt. They had one that said total eclipse of the Haute, because Terre Haute, Indiana, they just a lot of things just say Haute. They drop the Terra. It's a long word. You
what
know?
Does Haute mean exactly?
High, like haute couture.
Haute couture, like high fashion.
High fashion. High,
or high, high yeah. land, yeah. Terre Haute.
Exactly.
Haute, hunty.
Total eclipse of the Haute.
I think it should be called total eclipse of the hunty. But that's mm-hmm. like that's dating me. Nobody uses the word hunty anymore.
Very few people. Although isn't we do terrible? Still have hunty t-shirts for sale on the website at feastoffun.com/store.
That's right. Well, yes, if you want to buy one, email us because we're having problems with the store, but oh. that's another story.
Okay. Yeah. another podcast.
But yeah, so here we are. You know, God, it's like it's been a really long journey in my life to doing and talking to people. And, you know, we've done 3,000 shows, which is to me over 3,000 shows of this podcast. And people are like, who have you interviewed? And more, I said, more questions like, who have you not interviewed? You know, and for me, it's like this all kind of started back in, God, what year was that? We're looking at like the early 90s. I did a show that was really controversial called 10 Saints. And I was studying photography at the time. And so mm-hmm. I went to 10 different artists that I knew and I interviewed them and I transcribed their interviews up on a wall. And I did this giant, basically like 24 by... you know, 56 inch photo of them and invited them to create an altar. And ooh. Even Linda Montano, Rachel Hinshaw, Chris Rincon, some really like cool artists, Saloni Suds was part of that. And God, I'm blanking out his name. I think it was Robert Lehman. He was a modern dancer who passed away from HIV and AIDS. And he decided to bring into the altar a vial of his blood, ooh. Sweat, sperm.
Semen.
And semen, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was HIV positive.
So you drank it all?
Yeah.
You're like, let me have it.
I'm well, invincible. it was really like, it was at a college art gallery. Mm-hmm. And they shut down the exhibition.
Oh, really?
Yeah, over because they were like, you're putting a biohazard. You know, and so I had to then basically get from Aid Services of Austin a letter explaining that if someone is HIV positive and the blood's been sitting on a table for like a week or whatever.
Well, it was in a container, right?
It was in a sealed container, but they were like, children could play with this. And I was like, there are no children coming into this boring art gallery. And they had
here,
a whole
kids, have some blood, have some semen.
It was so crazy. So I found myself in the center of a crossfire of a hurricane. It was like, it was just madness. They had this panel and I was like, no one ever threatened me like with kicking me out of school, but it was like, it was serious. And they had a public discussion and all this heated controversy. And
there was a lot of AIDS hysteria back in the day. There isn't today, but.
Well, some people who should have known better. I'm not going to say any names. Mm-hmm. Should I say
names? No, don't say names. It's not worth it. It's 40 years
it's
ago.
It's 40-year-old gossip. We're taking the sides of the people who are like anti, you know, HIV and AIDS. And mm-hmm. you know, they were sincerely worried that somebody could get hurt. Mm-hmm. And at the time it was like, you know, people were like dying of AIDS, like left and right. And it was like, you know, LGBTQ people were not on television and we were misconstrued by even like people we knew, you know, and it's like, imagine if like, you know, during the COVID pandemic, yeah. even more people died, but everybody who died was only gay people that you were friends mm-hmm. with, you know?
Yeah. And it was a moral issue. Wrong with you.
And on top of all that, not only did the government not do anything, both the Democrats and the Republicans were like, pinning this on you. Like if you didn't sneeze or breathe on people, you wouldn't catch COVID. So to me, it was like when COVID came around, I was like, well, this is America's karmic debt coming back to haunt them, you know, to some degree. And I was hoping that, you know, people would not politicize this disease like they did with HIV and AIDS, but they did. And here we are, you know, people are still, you know, you can listen to Stephen Thrasher's, interviews about, you know, the viral underclass and how we're still having to learn about how to ethically deal with disease as it manifests itself, illness and infections as they manifest themselves in the world, because we're still using this as a way to like harm people who are marginalized or powerless or invisible. So I said to myself, you know what, children's, this is what I'm going to dedicate my life to, is putting a microphone in front of these people and let the world have it. And boy, did we did.
Have it, you did.
And along the road, we've made some wonderful friends, and we've held some terrible people accountable, and we've also spotlighted some wonderful artists and, you know, pioneers and weirdos and misfits and outcasts that normally would not be heard
and
seen.
And I think that's like the true legacy in that sense, is we've had so many wonderful people that like came through this door and sat at this table and have talked about like their life as their career, their artistry, and then they've just gone on and blown up and just done amazing things since then.
I know. Jinx Monsoon here, she was like refusing to sing one time. And I was like, you have to sing because this is your gift to the universe.
But she did come in and perform. She sang. It was wonderful.
And then RuPaul was like, I don't know if I want to continue with show business and stuff. And I said,
I don't know if RuPaul's Drag Race will succeed.
Yeah, she really had a lot of anxiety and doubt about it. And to me, you know, for better or for worse, I was like, you can do this. You know, I feel like sometimes like that episode of Lisa Simpson when she like convinces Montgomery Burns to like recycle. Mm-hmm. And his idea of recycle is harvesting the ocean. And you're like, not like that.
Well, you know, for better or for worse, I think, you know, when you look at RuPaul's Drag Race in the overall scheme of thing, I think it's really been great for queer people because it's just so much visibility. And we see so many out queer performers having jobs and income and opportunities like I wouldn't have even imagined probably, you know, 20 years ago when we first started this podcast that there'd be so many out there.
And, you know, identities changing and morphing and stuff. Mm-hmm. And trans people still don't have a lot of resources for transitioning, and transitioning can be very expensive for people.
And so
with RuPaul's Drag Race or other, you know, entertainment as careers for trans people, it's giving them at least the resources or tools to try to get the funds they need to fearlessly be themselves and live their authentic lives. Mm-hmm. Even though J.K. Rowling has other words to say about that. This week, J.K. Rowling announced that she will not forgive Daniel Radcliffe or Hermione.
Or any of them.
Any of them for being inclusive of LGBTQ people.
What a terrible person.
Well, yeah. You know, she's lost her marbles. She needs that, I don't know enough about Harry Potter stuff, but they need to like do the wand to zap her back into reality. She's just got Voldemort to... Poof, you know?
It's like she's really like, this is the hill I want to die on. It's just like, no one's like, what's the problem here? You know? Let women be women. Let boys be boys. Let girls be girls. Let people do what they want to do.
But throughout this journey, there's been me and my husband, Mark Phelan, who we met on April 4th, 1999 at a club. I said, haven't I been chatting with you on the internet? And you were like, internet? What? What the fuck is that? I mean, you knew what the internet was.
Of course I knew what the internet was. But you were like, AOL. I moved from Europe to the United States because the internet was becoming like a much larger thing.
Here?
Yes, here. It was like things were starting to happen.
Because you were living in Germany.
I was living in Germany, and then things were happening. And so I was just like, well, let me go back and get on this internet thing because I was living in a small town. And then,
Internet.
So I did know. I just wasn't hooking up with guys on the internet. You are.
It was a great resource because, you know, it's like you go to the gay bars. And this is the weird thing that I'm observing today. It's like, and talking to young people, it's like they don't go on Grindr or Scruff or any of the hookup apps, Tinder. They're all wastelands.
Where are they hooking up?
I don't know. They're all kind of like.
It's those gaming platforms. They all play games together.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Or, you know, there are actually studies out there that says that Gen Z is not having as much sex as the other ones.
Well, we can fix that.
Okay, Grandpa.
Just, you know, as T.S. Madison said, you know, own a business, suck a dick.
Step your pussy up,
you know. But listen, if you don't want to have sex, don't have sex, you know. Yeah. It's like your identity, your experience, your life is what you want to make it. Fearlessly be yourself. And, you know, this birthday, I guess, starts the beginning of more life with you as my husband, as my partner, than without you. Isn't that incredible?
I met you when you were 26. So yeah. 26 plus 26 is 52. And here we are.
Here we are. But, but you know, the people are not born in the age zero.
Yes.
Although some cultures in China did, and I believe in Korea, at some point in history, they used to... When kids were born, they were 0 years old, and their first birthday, everybody's birthday, was on the Chinese New Year. And so, of course, now today, that's not the case, but it used, if you talk to people who are familiar with Chinese history, they would explain that. Because I was Googling about the possibility of doing a show about birthdays and stuff, and I started like figuring out, like, who the hell is owning the song Happy Birthday now?
Who does own it?
Well, for a while, it was Michael Jackson owned it. He bought it from in that big purchase where he bought the Beatles catalog. So I guess like still his family still owns it. I don't know what's going on with it, but you know, apparently somebody owned the copyright, and that's why you couldn't sing Happy Birthday on television, and because they would charge a lot of money, and so other artists started writing their own birthday songs.
I think the Happy Birthday was based on Good Morning to You, Good Morning to You.
Good morning. Yeah, so that's the copyright. Yeah. Good morning to you, good morning to you, good morning, my darling, good morning to you. And my grandmother, she was telling me, and I remember this very clearly, when she was a little girl, they didn't celebrate birthdays. That's how old she was. That's a new thing. In Western culture, about 120 years ago, birthdays started becoming a thing. But it's like the people didn't, you know.
Well, children weren't really children before. It wasn't until like Victorian times that we had an idea of like childhood, you know, because kids kind of grew up and then you're like, all right, you're six, get a job.
Well, there's so much money to be made in celebrating children's birthdays, you know, and stuff. And some cultures don't. Some religions don't. Jehovah's Witnesses don't.
And weddings used to not be a big deal either. You would just go get married. So maybe your family would be there, maybe not. And you might have a little breakfast or whatever. But now it's like a huge industry.
And so, you know, the birth of podcasting happened in 2005. And from there on, you know, every year we've sort of like been inviting people to help fund and sponsor the show on our birthdays, just because like, hey, it's our birthday. Please give us some money because this doesn't make any money. So if you can go to feastofun.com/donate and make a one-time donation, that would be fantastic. Because I'm going to be getting my pro card.
How is that going to happen?
Slowly but surely. I mean, the same way.
Don't call me Shirley.
That's a joke from, you know, people, airplane pilots, all those jokes from the movie Airplane. They always are doing it to each other.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They say to each other, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Yeah, they do.
Have you ever been to a Turkish bathhouse?
And so, so with podcasting, we've done all these things and, you know, a lot of jokes, a lot of graphics, you know, a lot of podcasters did audio, but we would do I would do a lot of graphic work, you know, which in hindsight now it looks like AI was... before AI existed, you know, and one of the things we made was a lesbian pride flag in 2008, which was then borrowed and stolen from My Lesbian Life.
It inspired.
Why would you use that as opposed to the other word?
Well, you know, it's being kind rather than, you know, it was there on the internet. They saw it. They said, I like this, but I want to make it my own.
Well, if someone steals your car, would you say they borrowed it or would you say and didn't return it?
Well, there you go.
I mean, she took it.
Yes.
She didn't claim where she found it and she passed it off as her own. Yes. That is, if she were a college student, she would be in trouble. That's called theft.
Yes.
And that's what she did. And, you know, maybe with the best of intentions, but she later turned out to be kind of a racist, transphobic person. And so as the controversy with the people who make the lesbian pride flags unfolded, there was always somebody on the internet to redesign it, like a game of telephone.
Right.
So when it started out as the bear pride flag with shades of lipstick as best the shades of fur and the cute little lips on the top left corner, the lips came off and the colors became, instead of shades of lipstick, it became kind of like the Dunkin' Donuts flag. So it went in more warmer and colder, and then just, you know, shades of purple and orange. And that's where we are today. And, you know, Lesbian Visibility Week starts next week. So we're going to be reposting some of our classic episodes of interviews and conversations with lesbian pioneers.
Lesbian icons.
Lesbian icons. So, and you're like, who the hell is that?
There's lots of them.
Yeah. So I'm saying Gay Adegbolola, Cameron Esposito, Kate Clinton,
Margaret Cho.
Yeah. I mean, everybody, you know, pretty much
Monique.
Like Monique. Yeah. She's bisexual. Yeah. So some of the people. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. So that's coming next week. And throughout the year, one of the weirdest things that also happened on the podcast through the years was like Lady Gaga and our relationship with Lady Gaga.
We don't have a relationship
anymore. We don't.
I don't think she listens to the podcast anymore.
But she did at some point in time.
Or at least somebody in her camp did.
Or somebody, one of our advisors. But she was initially came to us as Stephanie Germanotta, a cabaret singer who was in town for Windy City Idol and wanted to come on the podcast to talk about her new album, Stephanie. And we're like, hell no, this sucks. We were just sick of cabaret artists. I think we had just gotten
a couple complaints from listeners about like, oh, who are these cabaret artists you have on? Oh, those are my least favorite episodes.
And we at the time were
and
just
they
like,
were a lot to engineer musically too. The musical episodes were a lot. I do appreciate the people, the musicians that came on. There's a lot of people that were still friends with the musicians, like Tom Goss and Levi Christ, who often performs and says, I know a lot of you people came here because you've heard my interview on Feast of Fools like all those years ago. And he still does this, you know, almost 20 years later. And I really appreciate that when people who are past guests of the podcast say like, you know, just show appreciation and gratitude.
I wish I kept that CD because that probably be worth money now, you know, but it like I listened to the tracks and it was like it was not like Poker Face. I mean, the music was OK, you know, and then about shortly thereafter, around the same time, Katy Perry, who was at the time an unknown person, had a new song called I Kiss a Girl. And wanted to come on our podcast to talk about it. And we're like, hey, we're going to go to South by Southwest.
We're traveling, yeah.
And so we'll schedule it for next week. And then it went number one. Back when, you know, that actually meant something.
I'm sure it still means something to
me. Well, you know, Beyonce's album is number one on all kinds of charts. On all the charts and also the folk Americana chart.
Ooh.
And, you know, all the right wingers are like, stay in your lane. So staying in your lane is now like, you know, a dog whistle for racism. You know? Megyn Kelly says she's not a queen. She hasn't cured cancer. I'm like, Megyn Kelly, and what are you a queen of? Bullshit. I was like, she had to quit her job at Fox because there were sexists towards her. So you think that she would like understand that and understand how she can play a role in creating a hostile environment for other women.
You know, there's people involved in conservative media. Just there's a disconnect or hypocrisy that I think they actually, frankly, they enjoy. They like talking out of both sides of their mouth. They're like, I can do anything. I can say anything. It doesn't matter.
Well, if you're going to pick and choose from the Bible, pick the good, kind, loving stuff and not
the hateful
stuff.
They're going to pick the stuff that benefits them or they think benefits them.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of punishers. They want to punish people. They don't want to celebrate people. They want to put people down and humiliate them because they feel like that kind of stuff is going to make them submit to their will.
And at some point, you have to acknowledge that Beyonce is a marketing juggernaut, and you know, maybe us talking about it is part of the marketing business. Like they're projecting Beyonce's quotes on the signs of buildings in New York City and stuff. Like this ain't a country album, this is a Beyonce album, you know. And and it's people like, well, Billboard disagrees, it is a folk Americana album, and so it's number one. And the thing about it is the folk Americana chart is usually like people who are very grassroots, don't have a large budget, don't have a lot of access to the kind of things Beyonce has access to. So in terms of that, it is, I can see their frustration that it's like, that's going to stay number one for years and years and decades because, you know, people who make that kind of music don't have those kind of resources that she has. So it is a like I can understand.
Maybe they need to step their pussy up.
Maybe they do. I mean, you know, Beyonce did start off as a pageant queen, little Miss Juneteenth. So, you know, she was a rodeo queen, and now she's a folk Americana Beyonce queen. So, and queen can mean lots of things. It doesn't have to be like, you know, one thing. It's not like British royalty defines it, you know. Lady Bunny just came out with a parody song about it.
I listened to part of it. Has she released the whole thing?
No,
I think she wants people to come and see it at her live show. Like, if you really want the good jokes, you got to come see it in person.
Yeah, she's not. The one thing about Lady Bunny's shows is that the humor is buried inside the experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not in the trailer. Whereas I feel like a lot of movies, trailers, and even like Beyonce releasing Texas Hold'em, mm-hmm. I feel like that's clearly the strongest song in the album. Mm. Some people really like Blackbird, but that's not an original song. It's a cover, you know? And so I feel like Texas Hold'em as the original song from, you know, Cowboy Carter is mm-hmm. the strongest. And to me, I have mixed feelings about it because I was expecting the rest of the album to be mm-hmm. even more impressive mm-hmm. than that song. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was like they put the good stuff mm-hmm. up front, you know? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, kind of like our podcast, like 99% new material or old material.
Which do you like better? Yeah. Do you like her Texas Hold'em parody better, or do you like the West Virginia Girls parody?
West Virginia Girls is hilarious.
She really likes to make fun of the South.
Well,
that's where she's from.
That's where she's from. And also she likes to sort of latch on to, like, you know, juggernaut pop culture songs
mm-hmm.
and then rewrite them. And certainly Jackie Beat has done a phenomenal job as well doing that, you know. And there's that song from Africa, Toto, you know. And instead of
instead of singing I Bless the Rains down in Africa. And listen, it's not the whole song. It's part of a medley.
But she says, I started AIDS down in Africa.
I'm not, you know, and that was funny like 10 years ago when that came out or whatever, how many years ago. But I don't know if it would get the same kind of laughter. People don't have that same kind of humor around HIV and AIDS.
Like, well, it is interesting. There is a cultural divide with older LGBTQ mm-hmm. people and younger LGBTQ people over mm-hmm. what's funny.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, on tomorrow's show, we have a comedian, a young comedian, queer comedian called Queenie Bitch, who's also a musician. And sort of be talking about, like, the way, you know, old gays don't get it.
Well, yeah, like, do young people get it? There's a blogger out here who watched, or a TikToker who recently watched all of, like, Sex in the City, and they were just complaining about it, saying how it doesn't hold up, like, the same way that Friends does. And, like, but it was, like, they don't understand, like, the time that it was made, you know?
Right.
It was, like, it was a different, completely different time.
Yeah.
And so you like there's a lot of nuances you're just not going to pick up on. And our sense of humor, especially our sense of humor around irony or satire, it's harder for a lot of these younger people to understand that, because I think that they're very earnest in a sense. So if you say something, and even if you have that intonation or you twist it, they're taking it at its face value, right. And not like, oh, they're being ironic. They're saying it in a way that's supposed to be funny.
Yeah. And so, you know, the Oops, I Ruined It, or Oops, I Fixed It, because as long as he pays tribute to mm-hmm. songs, did a Hank Williams Jr. version of the song
mm-hmm.
with exactly the same lyrics and beat, showing mm-hmm. that, of course, it is a country.
And so was that song. A Hank Williams AI?
No. So what he's doing is he's literally playing on a keyboard mm-hmm. the different parts of the song.
Mm-hmm.
Then he records his own vocals.
Okay.
And then uses AI software to change his voice to sound like Hank Williams.
Oh, Jr. Wow.
Do you want to? I can play it on the show.
Let's play it a bit.
Well, this ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em. So lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus and throw your keys up. Stick around, round, 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 round. And I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real life boogie and a real life hoedown. Don't be a bitch, come and take it to the floor. I'll be damned if I can't slow dance with you. Come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real life boogie and a real life hoedown. Don't be a bitch, come and take it to the floor now.
Hank Williams!
I do like that he puts applause in the end of the track.
Well, you know, if you're not going to applaud, if you can't applaud for yourself, why even bother doing it?
But no, yeah, that's what I do in a lot of my drag shows, like an acts in the song that I'm lip syncing to. I put applause at the end and the beginning, too.
Because otherwise, it also will get people
applauding. And it works.
It works, you know.
People are like, you don't hear anybody, so they don't applaud because they don't want to be rude. But they start hearing, you know, suddenly it's like, oh, wow, he's really important. And not realizing that it's part of the soundtrack. Little tip here, queens.
Oh, yeah. Put the applause in there because people will just think it's natural.
They don't realize it.
And put some, like, if you have a joke or something in your your set, you know, as long as you're lip syncing it, put a little laugh track in there, too.
Yeah. Why not? You know? I mean, they used to do it for sitcoms, you know, and then
I think they still do it.
For some of them, they type in front of recorded in front of a live studio audience, and that studio audience is a automatic laugh track machine.
Mm.
But
if you hear other people laughing, it will make you laugh too.
But like, you know, some of the things that we used to think are funny are no longer funny anymore. And so one of those things that don't hold up well is O.J. Simpson's scenes from the Naked Gun movie series. You're just like, ooey.
It's hard to look at him after he went on trial for murder.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And especially all the things that have happened since. And it was like, you know, there's, you know, he was found not guilty.
Yeah.
Beyond a reasonable doubt. But most people, I think, assume at this point in time that he actually did do it. And he was found liable in a civil case because the threshold for proof was much lower.
But I guess he didn't wind up having to pay any money for that civil case. I'm not sure exactly how that worked out. But the Goldman family of Ron Goldman's sued. So here's what happened. He was like completely broke, and his daughter, O.J. Simpson's daughter, Nicole Brown Simpson's daughter.
I think it was his eldest daughter.
Or his eldest daughter from his first marriage, was it? Okay. Because he had two kids with her, and then he had some other children outside beforehand. She recommended that he put out a book saying, "If I Did It," and it was ghostwritten by somebody else, and he just slapped his name on it. From the vantage point, if he had killed Nicole Brown Simpson, which was like incredibly bad taste, but it did sell well. And so Goldman's family went and sued and got the rights for it and the financial proceeds of it. So he did lose some money to them. And then they republished it with the words, "I did it," and the word "if" in very small font. Confessions of a Killer.
Well, it's just so sad too, because, you know, Ron had only known Nicole for like 6 weeks.
Yeah, talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was gay too. Like people thought that, you know, even like
was
comedians.
He gay?
Yeah, Ron Goldman was gay, and comedians were always like, "Ooh, you're fucking a woman, OJ Simpson's woman in the house and stuff." And it was like, no, he was their cocaine dealer. You know, he was a waiter at a restaurant, and I believe the story goes is that she left her sunglasses, expensive sunglasses, at the restaurant, and he was going by their house to drop him off, and found them fighting there and got himself killed, and she got killed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who got killed first.
I think she was killed. I think they say that he may have witnessed something. Yeah.
So we don't really know the details because, you know, part of it is like the L.A. It was a clear and cut case, and the L.A. Police Department at the time was very guilty of framing innocent black people, with planting evidence. And so they were so corrupt that at the time they were basically fucked themselves in getting a guilty verdict for O.J. Simpson because of that.
Mm.
And, you know, then there's another theory that O.J. Simpson didn't do it, that it actually was his son. And basically that the idea was that the son, who had a criminal history of violence and attempted murder, he was under a murder investigation, who was taking medication to curb his violent outbreaks, had made plans for Nicole Brown and her family to come eat at his restaurant the night she was killed. And she stood him up. And that was documented. And I'm not sure... That's how much the police fucked this up. It's like they didn't even really examine or scrutinize O.J. Simpson's son. And now upon O.J. Simpson's death, we're starting to see even a bigger shocking revelation that was there in plain sight, that he had a gay dad who worked in the Bay Area as a drag queen under the name Mama Simpson. you can't make this shit up. This is like a Madea, you know.
Mm.
But well, I guess without the jokes. I guess, right?
OJ didn't really have much of a relationship with his dad, and like schoolmates and chums said that they you know, he had left home at a younger age. But he said that he remembered going to see OJ's dad, and he answered the door in a bathrobe, and then there was another guy in the house who also had a bathrobe on. So it was like we knew what they were doing. Yeah. But he worked as a drag queen in the Bay Area. Unfortunately, he died of, I think they listed it as cancer, but it was most likely, or was also, they didn't want to say that it was from AIDS. He died from AIDS in like the
1986.
Yeah.
I mean, all the articles that I'm finding about it all clearly saying that it's HIV and AIDS mm-hmm. that he died yeah. from. You know,
I think OJ yeah. may have said it was cancer or something like that. Now, you know, you can't have cancer because you have AIDS.
Consequences
right?
of right. HIV and AIDS. Yeah. yeah. So, yeah, I'm curious to know what her drag act was like.
You know?
Be like, she's really slayed it on stage.
But yeah, it was like, yeah. you know, the thing is like, I don't think it's like for people nowadays, if you weren't alive at that point in time, just how big of a trial this was. It was just the whole nation was just obsessed with it. And the trial was on, you know, on television, and people were watching it, and they were glued to their sets, and everybody had an opinion. And it really seemed like all of white America was definitely like, he did it, he's guilty. And then black people were like, I'm not so sure. I mean, some people were like, he did it, but other people were just like, I just can't believe it. And, you know, for a lot of us, it was really just a shock because, you know, O.J. Simpson was such an incredible football player at his time, and he was a star, and then he did these commercials, and he was in acting, and he made us laugh, and he seemed like a personable guy. And then you're just seeing, like, later you're hearing these accounts of him just being so abusive towards Nicole, and then these murder charges, and you're just like, you felt like a certain betrayal because of it.
Well, and SNL comedian, Weekend Update host Norm Macdonald mm-hmm. was let go of his job on the show, even though he was seen like one of the best Weekend Update mm-hmm. anchors in a long time, because of his relentless and very point blank saying O.J. Simpson did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess at the time, some executives at NBC television were like friends with O.J. Simpson or had some kind of relationship. And they were like, this is, you know, out of the question. And so they just unceremoniously canceled him, removed him off the show. And so you can watch this on like Saturday, on David Letterman, mm-hmm. Norm Macdonald talking about getting fired like in overnight from Saturday Night Live. And just how
he just died a few years ago himself, right?
Yeah. So, you know, that. Yeah, you know, I wish Norm Macdonald were alive to see how people's reaction were today mm-hmm. to that, you know. And part of it is like, you know, it is possible to be right and also be racist, right? So it's like, you know, you may not like Beyonce's music, or you may think that O.J. Simpson did it, but in your overzealous glee to point that out, then maybe it's something you may want to like mm-hmm. examine and not think about it as like, look, I just don't care for country music. I still think it's square.
Mm-hmm.
Literally square dancing, right? you know, it's like, you know, it's a tragedy, especially for the, you know, the Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman's families and for them. But also in the sense that, like, we live in a world where people have a really hard time expressing anger and handling anger in a constructive way.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, it's like when murder happens, it's nothing to be laughed at or celebrated or to cheer for, you know?
Mm.
So, you know, rest in peace, O.J. Simpson, Nicole Brown Simpson, Ron Goldman, and Norm Macdonald. May you guys find a better life, you know? When the solar eclipse was happening, I was like, I did a little prayer and I said, it's like, I hope everybody in the world finds peace, that they find what they're dreaming for. And
unless it's a terrible thing, and then
yeah, no, I hope not.
Not that.
May all your dreams come true, unless they're terrible dreams, and I really hope they don't come true. But you know, I hope they find what they need. You know, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. Is you know, thanks Rolling Stones, but that's good advice. You know, and some, you know, and people like I said that to one of my coworkers. He's like, even Trump. I was like, yeah, even Trump. You know, it's like if he maybe he needs to go to jail. Maybe he'll find the love of his life in his prison cell. And like, he'll finally
the
find
love of
true
his
love.
Life is himself.
Well, maybe he'll learn to love somebody for the first time in his life.
I don't know if that man's capable of it. I mean, his trial is starting soon on the hush money trial, so we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, it's you know,
what a world we live in.
The thought of Trump being president again is terrifying. I mean, and the fact that we're even considering this, that we're having an election on this criminal,
mm-hmm.
mobster.
Autocrat.
Yeah, you know, it just shows like a lot is broken in this country. It's going to take a lot of effort and time to fix it.
I do appreciate him testing the limits of democracy.
And I'm glad it's somebody that it's, you know, pretty obvious what a rotten scoundrel mm-hmm. he is, as opposed to somebody who's a little bit smoother and
mm-hmm.
chill and sneaky, you know? So it's like, you know, sometimes you gotta look for the blessing in the terrible situations.
Mm.
So one of the most famous conjoined twins just passed away.
Lorian's George Chappelle. And one of George, you know, it was interesting because they're, you know, they're co-joined twins. And for years, they lived as, you know, two women, right? And then one of them, George, decided like, no, I'm a trans man. So they came out. So it was like not only were they world's oldest living co-joined twins, there were also different genders. And George was, you know, did country music.
Damn, I didn't know that about them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was like around 2007, George came out and was just like, I'm a trans man.
Wow. So he was started taking testosterone replacement therapy, even though they share blood
together?
How does that work?
Well, you know, we don't really talk about what the medical implications are of those kinds of things or what they were doing. I assume that they probably didn't do hormones just because maybe the other one, because they share blood.
But I mean, the trans man of the conjoined twins, he had hair on his face, you know? So I was just like, what?
He did?
Yeah. I mean, the one photo that I have. Yeah. So I'm like, how did that work out? I don't know. Do you not see that?
No.
Yeah. Okay. There's like, he has like a beard. I mean, you know, it's not a very, it's not a thick beard like mine, but there is facial hair there growing.
I don't know
if they were Italian, you know, and so they just, you know, stopped shaving or something like that.
You think Chappelle is Italian?
I don't know. Maybe.
No, I think that's a German name.
But, you know, like it's really, talk about an interesting relationship, right? It's like, this is somebody you're physically connected to. And people say that like conjoined twins almost have this like psychic connection with each other.
Mm.
I mean, you know, couples.
Well, you're close.
Do.
You're going to have the same experiences, right? Yeah. You're going to, every time one of you goes to the bathroom, the other one's going. So you're always on the same wavelength.
I mean, would you think that you and I share a indescribable, deeper connection than most people do?
I would say when you're in a relationship with somebody, especially for a very, very long time, yeah.
You pick up on mm-hmm. subtle things, but there's even, you know, things that can't be explained, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like even our dog knows when one of us is coming home, at least, you know, when he was younger. Now he's just like sleeping. He's
they
like,
say that's based on smell. They understand like your smell particles evaporate over time. And so they realize.
So it's like a clock.
It's like a clock for them. Yeah.
And then that clock can't be clocked or.
So like once like there's so no, many, yeah. like 1,000 particles in the air yeah. and like you always come home when it's depleted to like 200 particles. And so like, oh, there's only 200 particles. They'll be home soon.
Wow.
And then there you go.
So you're more predictable than you think you are.
People are creatures of habit mostly. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they're like the criminal always returns to the scene of the crime because you want to see things again.
Well, because the criminal, you know, what is it that they said one of my favorite films, Silence of the Lambs, it's like, you covet what you see, Clarice.
Mm-hmm. What you see every day.
What do you see every day? One of the greatest films of all time. It was a controversial film at the time, but we thought it was hilarious. Silence of the Lambs. It was like boycotted and protested by LGBT groups, and we were just like, this movie's amazing.
But, you know, I think, you know, we talked to a lot of trans people too, and they're just like, a lot of them really love that film. They think that it's, you know, it's, well, first of all, it's certainly frightening, and Hannibal Lecter is an amazing character, and Jodie Foster is fierce. And, you know, Buffalo Bill wasn't really, you know, they get the get out of jail free card because they're like, well, they identify them not as really trans, so he's not really a trans villain.
But he's non-binary. He's gender non-conforming for sure.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Know? The true villains. Just kidding.
But it is, it's an interesting thing, like watching that film again. So, and this is like one thing I'm wanting to do a podcast on is just like re-examining these like classic and forgotten films that people have never heard of or people that know really well. Because when I listen to like film reviews or read film reviews, it's just as much fun to read about them on films you've never heard of as well as films you love and adore.
Mm.
You know, like for me, Little Shop of Horrors is iconic. And it's a soundtrack that I listen to every single day. And Rick Moranis, you know, because we don't think of it. We think of him as the nerd from Ghostbusters, you know?
Yeah.
But he was an accomplished musician and he was on Second City television for years. And so when he got cast in that role, he just brought the singing up to another level. Levi Stubbs, who does the voice of Audrey 2, the plant, the man-eating plant from outer space, the mean green mother from outer space, just brought this like playful rascal quality to, you know, which is a disembodied voice on a puppet, to that character that got him an Oscar nomination.
And he didn't win.
Aww. But the Mean Green Mother from Outer Space was performed at the Academy Awards. Not as good as the original soundtrack, but you know, just the way he laughs, just all these little quips and asides that are coming out of the side of his mouth. If you listen to the original Broadway recording or subsequent recordings, it just doesn't have the level of Levi Stubbs from the Four Tops that what he brought to that role.
And that's also another gender nonconforming plant.
That's right. She's not a healthy girl. And neither is the Audrey One, played by Ellen Green, who is also an extraordinary actress.
And now Jinx Monsoon on Broadway.
I know. And so many comedy legends, Christopher Guest and John Candy and Jim Belushi and
Dan Aykroyd,
they're all in this movie. Steve Martin is in it, you know, playing the dentist. Another brilliant performance. And it also was one of Frank Oz's first films. And this made Frank Oz be able to make other films because it was such a commercial and critical success. So like, you know, Little Shop of Horrors has all this behind the scenes stuff. And you can watch that on YouTube, like the puppeteers just making the plant move was a brilliant feat of engineering. There's no CGI in this movie. And so what they're doing is they're puppeting this giant plant, and then Rick Moranis is moving slowly, and then they speed up the film to make it look like the plant's just like bouncing around and laughing and giggling. But it's, you know, they're lip syncing to this.
You can kind of tell when you see the scene that, like, like when you really examine it, you're like, oh, I can kind of see where he's just moving slowly and they're speeding it up.
If I can move and I can walk, who says I can't do anything I want? I can deliver, baby.
Yes, you can. I
mean, part of it is like there is this like queer, like drag queen quality to it. And, you know, if you look at, there was a British production of Vicky Vox, you know, William Detox and Vicky Box trio. She performed the Audrey 2 as a drag queen. And so
was she on stage?
She's on stage. Yeah. So she's wearing this crazy outfit. And so she's more like a genie that comes out of a bottle, you know? And it's really interesting to see her sort of embody that character and physically seduce Seymour as, you know, because the plants are kind of stuck in that pot, right? Well, for her, she's able to sort of move around more and use body language, like deliver, baby, you know? So it's a really interesting, I wish there were more clips of it on YouTube, but it's really like the costumes are really interesting. And I love it when, you know, musical theater productions kind of get out of their habits, you know, of traditional storytelling or traditional presentation. I think that's why like Lion King on Broadway is so extraordinary, is because it kind of said, hey, we don't have to hide the puppeteers. Let's make the puppeteers like a second character on the stage. And so Julie Taymor, the director who kind of brought that idea to Disney, made this really beautiful, haunting production of Elton John and Tim Rice's musical, you know, Masi Wenya. Well, listen, guys, Thank you so much for listening to Feast of Fun. Remember, Feast of Fun is made possible because of fierce, fabulous listeners like you. On my birthday, consider making a one-time donation to feastoffun.com/donate or become a member at feastoffun.com/plus and access thousands of podcasts, all without ads.
You can also join us at patreon.com/feastoffun for an ad-free experience.
Yeah. And just for pennies a day.
Pennies a day. You can support your favorite podcast.
Patreon.com.
Or your second favorite podcast.
/feastoffun. Who's their number one favorite?
I don't know. That's up to them.
Well, then it's their number one. You got low self-esteem, honey, if you think that people...
We might be somebody's third favorite podcast, but they still want to support us anyway.
That's true.
You know?
It takes all kinds. It
takes all kinds. You know, we help build this world, and we do it with your help.
I'll tell you this, from talking to the listeners of the show, they don't listen to any other shows except ours.
I know.
And they're like hungrily, eagerly awaiting new episodes. Well, next week, honey, you're going to get a new episode, a new rerun, courtesy of our advertisers, every day of the week, so for free.
There you go.
It's going to be interviews with lesbian legends, Lesbian Visibility Week.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for listening. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.